Welcome to Revere Assets, Your Money, with Danny Stewart.
You never know how far the stock is going to go down.
Tim Razor.
Danny knows I'm a geek for all of this stuff.
And Don Vandenborg.
Telling it like it is.
If you're seeking the best stock knowledge this side of Wall Street, you've come to the right place.
I'm sorry, did I steal your stuff?
No, you didn't steal any thunder. Who's handling this segment?
For the next hour, Danny, Tim, and Don will be talking investing.
Investing is 90% psychological, and I love that.
Trades.
The market will usually overshoot to the downside and to the upside.
And dumpster fires.
Because it doesn't matter what you think or what I think, and it matters even less what Danny thinks.
And now, here's your hosts, Danny, Tim, and Don.
There is a bevy of topics that I want to talk to you about in this journey excursion, Stock Nerds, Market Lovers, to another edition of Your Money Radio. But I have a note at the top of my page about a fellow named Bunker Bob, and I want to get to that. I want to get to our entry rules. I want to get to when loss ratio is worthless. I want to get to Bitfinex stealing your money. I want to get to auto trailing stops and how they changed the market. I want to get to right and wrong is worthless and how you've been led astray. But before I do that, I need to introduce my two partners here. Danny Stewart from our Florida offices. Don's always been in our Florida offices. I was about to say Floridian, but Danny is in South Florida right now, and he will be there for a while. So if you ever want to go see Danny and talk about maybe potentially how you got hosed on an annuity or a life insurance product that you didn't realize until you started listening to the show that you got hosed on. Danny can unscrew you if you're in the great state of Florida. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Jim. How are you?
Good. Not my best intro for you, but I'll keep working on that. And
I thought it was good.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get better. We'll get better. And then the portfolio extraordinaire, the one who has suffered with Blake Bortles, Don Vandenborg. He is in St. Augustine, and Don runs three portfolios, but my favorite of those portfolios, and it's not to say that it's good, better, or best. It's just my favorite for the reason I'm about to tell you is the Blue Chip Income portfolio, which absolutely captures the best of growth, the best income stocks, and it's infused with our soon-to-be patented sell discipline, just like all our portfolios are. Hello, Don.
How are you, Tim? How are you, Danny?
Good.
Well.
We've got the fake pleasantries out of the way. That's the worst part about radio, right? Like, that's the only part of our show that is absolutely positively kind of the worst for me is saying hello to people. Don, Danny, and I just actually said hi before we started the show. But no, we have to say hi for you because we just can't continue the conversation because you would find that weird. We've actually heard that. So let me continue. Do you want to hear about Bunker Bob, Danny?
I do, Tim.
Yeah, you're full of it. You don't want to hear about Bunker Bob, but I'm going to tell you.
I do. Now
really?
I'm curious.
So, okay. Yeah, so out in the town that I live in, I think it might be one town over. I don't know. The local rag that gets dropped off at my door.
Is he a prepper?
No, he's the former mayor of this town. And because he got voted out of office, he started assailing people's characters that are running for the office he got unelected out of. Right? That's how you say that, unelected out of. And he calls himself Bunker Bob, and he's got a YouTube channel. And so the front page of the local newspaper has this guy plastered on the front, and he's a nut job. And all he's doing is assailing people's characters. And it got me thinking, this Bunker Bob is no different than the people on TV or the people in Twitter finance or the people in newsletters that do this to people with their finances, meaning they get them scared. Like Bunker Bob gets people scared. I haven't watched, I refuse to click on his YouTube channel. Everything I know from this article. I won't support this degenerate one bit with one iota of viewing to listen to him. But it got me thinking about, Don, how do you say James, the guy who sounds like a sneeze to me?
Altucher.
Yeah, yeah, Don. Who, Don, who's the worst newsletter? Well, the human sneeze. Who's the news? The worst newsletter writer you can think of off the top of your head?
Anybody that's a perma, anything. I don't have a particular name.
I got anybody that always
writes one way about everything.
On Twitter, I've got, who's that Northman trader? Who's that fella?
Oh God. Yeah. He's perma bear.
Yeah. And so anyone who just continuously beats the drum in one direction, whether it's your politic, whether it's your finance, there's usually a bent to this, and it's nefarious often at best. I'm not saying these people are committing crimes. Don't misunderstand me. It's nefarious to your personal well-being that the farther the direction you travel in to one side of an argument or the other, unless it's the obvious type things, the worse it typically gets for you. And this period right now is so unique. And someone's going to say, well, Tim, the market's not unique. It's just repeating history and it's repeating emotional patterns, because the thing that hasn't changed about money is the humans involved with it. Even if we talk about algorithmic trading, the algorithms are programmed by who? Humans. And until that changes, until the computers can program the computers, which I get it, I know it exists right now, but until the algorithms are being programmed by other algorithms, then there's still a human element to all this. And it is a little bit of history repeating. But what typically happens with these newsletter writers, they just, or the Bunker Bobs, we'll just call them Bunker Bobs from now on, that you get so wrapped around the axle, because what they're doing is they're selling you on your own fears. They're taking advantage of you. And a lot of stock nerds have trimmed, I know because you write to us, have trimmed what you let in your mind. You don't subscribe to all these newsletters again. But even Motley Fool, who is, I don't think, considered nefarious. Do you guys think Motley Fool's nefarious?
No, I don't.
No, but it's always the lead on on Twitter or the spam in your inbox. It's this guy predicted Amazon before its 27,000% rise, but what that plays on is your fear of missing out, and you don't know what stock they're being paid PAID to promote. There's always some element of nefarious behavior behind this stuff. Well, Tim, people got to get paid, right? And it's like, well, I don't think people should have to get exploited for them to get paid. I don't think you have to be, as a consumer, as a worker, as someone participating in markets or just life in general, I don't think your exploitation is justified for someone to get paid. And these newsletter people and these Northman traders, probably someone's going to write to this dude and he's just going to come after me. But these people, they just prey on you, and it's not a collective. Well, everyone doesn't believe Northman Trader. No, but the people that do, they'll follow that guy to the ends of the earth. Whether the end of the earth, by the way, is him jumping you off a cliff and running you right into the ground. And there's a ton of people right now in the media, not just on Twitter, but just in the media doing this to you. And I tell you, they're one of the best decisions we ever made here at Revere. And we had the discussion years ago, and every now and then it comes up again. We get asked, why don't we just, we get asked by people who really enjoy managing their own accounts, and they ask us, could we package our ideas into a newsletter, into a service? And each and every time we just come to the same conclusion. No. Do you realize the mentality of the people that, boy, I'm going to be really careful here. When I say mentality, there are so many people that are looking for a quick buck and looking for a stock messiah to land in their lives and point them in the direction so all they can do is buy calls or buy puts and they're going to get wealthy. And they take into no account that it's actually the psychology of investing that's 90% of this, and then finding a process that works for them. And everyone is different in this regard. And we come to the same conclusion that we don't want to participate in that subscription type, the transaction with investors or traders. It's not our clientele. That's not to speak ill of these people. That's not what I'm doing. But there's so much, and by the way, people get confused when I say short-termism. There's so much short-termism, and that doesn't mean that you got to buy and hold and sit through 30% correction, Stephanie. Like, it just means that there's so much short-termism in a what have you done for me lately mentality that it really can disrupt the flow of what you're trying to accomplish overall with a portfolio or a strategy. And it's just not worth it. But some of you, God bless, or maybe not you, but the people you know, because you get texts and emails from your friends. When you tell someone that you're involved with the markets, it's amazing how many people hit you up for a quote-unquote idea. And then they send you all the people that they follow, right? How many of you out there have that in your lives? Now imagine that for Danny, Don, and I. And so we've got a large collection of these type of people. And they bring up things that are so pointless to the market discussion. Like one of them is win-loss ratio. Well, what's your win-loss ratio? Don, explain why win-loss ratio is one of the most worthless statistics ever.
Because it doesn't talk about how much you're winning when you're winning and how much you're losing when you're losing. What's way more important is the percentage that you actually make when you win versus what you make when you lose.
It's right. And it's such a different mindset. Like trimming, or, you know, if you want a gardening analogy, going out into the garden and pulling the weeds and cutting the weed and getting the weeds before they blossom, getting them out of the garden really quickly. That's the secret to this. You want to stay in this game for a while? That's the secret. It's not a constant stream, a barrage of news cycles. We had a job report come out Friday. The average hourly wage is $27.77. Unemployment's at a low. And you keep hearing this drum about inflation and a whole bunch of other stuff. And you rarely hear or read about the discussion that it's technology that's keeping inflation low. And you see the cynicism of, well, it's all fake. It's the government's propping up the markets. No matter what your thought process is, how many of you stopped? How many people do you know let that stop them from investing? It kept them from themselves. And it's just not what we do here in the shop at Revere. It's nothing near that. It's every day. It's not. Talking about being right in the market or wrong in the market. I don't ever hear Don or Danny or myself. I don't do this. Argue a side of the market. The market just is. It's like Yoda. It just is. It's not right or wrong. It's how we're positioned working out. And then if it's not working out, what action are we taking to make sure that it does minimal damage? And then consequently, what inaction are we taking to maximize our gains? That's not right or wrong. That's just a process. It's like the 76ers. You got to trust the process. It was a great game last night if anybody saw it. So I think it's just a different... Every week I want to talk about mindset. And I want to free people to actually get out of their own way. The way you're marketed to, and you don't even realize it. You don't realize how many people exploit you. And I have zero interest in exploit. I know Danny and Don don't either. And I almost feel like I'm pandering here because, well, of course no one's going to come out and say they're going to exploit you. But just look at some of the materials that you take in. Examine with a little bit closer eye, a little more critical eye, some of the materials, one, you allow into your lives via maybe Facebook or Twitter. And then what do you allow to come into your inbox and do you actually consume? And then question if it's trying to exploit you, because that is the biggest form of disrespect. That's the antithesis of what we're trying to do here at Revere, where we actually educate and we provide a transparent model for you that you could actually follow along with. And these newsletter writers, these Elliott Wavers, these theorists, just awful. And it's just I keep saying newsletter writers, but it's economists too. Take our two favorite economists, America's Butler, Austin Goolsbee, and Mark Zandidou. Mark Zandidou, you know, he works for the company that puts out the private payroll reports. Do you know that, Daniel?
Danny. I do too.
Danny, what did I catch you doing? I mean, I knew you were too quiet. What did I catch you doing?
I had to take it off. I didn't want the background noise, so I had to take it off mute real quick.
Oh, okay. I got you.
I didn't
want...
Understood.
So Mark Sandy do the ADP, and just I want you to listen to this. Mark Zandidou comes, his company comes out and says private payrolls are around 275,000 jobs for the month of March. And right away he comes out because it didn't fit with Mark, if you follow Mark's work, it didn't fit with Mark Zandidou's narrative that the economy could be improving. Or it is improved, or it whatever's happening is working out, and it's politic getting in the way of actually, he's got a number in front of him that his company, him, has worked on. He knows the people. And he's saying, I don't believe this. This isn't right. And he goes on to tell you why it's a wrong number and jobs are going to be not good. Could you imagine driving in your car or doing whatever you do for work and you're seeing something unfold in front of you and you're going, no, I don't believe that. That's not happening. I mean, that's how pilots crash. They get lost in the that's no joke. You go fly up in the instrument conditions, meaning it's cloudy or training or whatever, and you can't see. It's not VFR, visual flight rules, and you don't trust your instruments, and you end up crashing your plane. Well, so the job report comes out on Friday, and it's actually within an earshot of the ADP number. And then, but it just, some of you are just like that right now. And you're missing out and you get in your own way. And I talk about this because how do you fix it for the future? How do you fix it moving forward? How do you get out of your own way? You've got to trim those sources that you're looking at. Or you have to be a professional like myself here and be able to understand everything. It's got a narrative behind it. I'm tongue in cheek here, folks. You've got to get over it. And some of you just can't, or you have people in your lives that don't allow you, and you fight with the markets and you fight with the news because it's not your narrative. And I think you should get out of having a narrative. Like if I said to Don, I'm going to do it right now live. Everyone who knows us and long-term listeners to the show know I don't share with Danny and Don what I want to talk about because I want authenticity. That's what this whole industry lacks is authenticity. There's always someone out to screw someone in this industry, and I don't want that. So I want authentic answers from Danny and Don. If I said, Don, what's your narrative on the economy? I'm just going to leave it to Don. Don, what's your narrative on the economy?
It's nice to know, but price is what matters.
There you go. Don doesn't have one. Don has zero narrative on the economy. Kicking ass in the markets. You don't have to have a narrative on everything. No one cares about your opinion. Everyone wants to seem important, and it just doesn't matter. The market doesn't matter. What matters is that you can wake up every day and ask yourself the question of the market. Well, what is the price asking me to do? And then understanding what's happening in the markets to maximize your gains. And then this is the other part here too. Minimize your losses. You don't have to sit through a fourth quarter of 2018. You just don't. You know, there's people, I mean, if you were like the admitted loss taker, she's not the only one, and God bless her for being honest, Stephanie Link for saying in one day, yeah, I've got 35, 25, 30% losses in certain stocks, and they're too cheap for me to sell now. Like, you don't have to be that person. Did you make 35% back on those stocks this year? I mean, think about that while you're waiting at home or your loved ones are waiting at home for their stocks to get back to even, you're missing out on an entire huge opportunity. And it comes down to process. Like, what is your process? And if your process is to listening to every opinion and then figuring out what to do, I bet you the next cup of coffee that your process is awful and your results are awful. And sometimes you hit it out of the park and sometimes you give it all back and it's not consistent. And so this jobs report, man, I'm telling you, this whole first quarter in the month of April, you've heard the economy is going to be in the toilet here. And who knows? I don't. It's a market. Anything can happen. But you just have to really understand that there's ebbs and flows to this thing, and what constitutes a pullback, what constitutes a sell-off. If you say, Tim, well, the jobs report is a catalyst, and that's why the markets are moving higher. The markets just pulled back the 2 days prior. How many of you sold everything? And I know you're out there. So anyway, any comments on that? I know. I just talked for a long time. Danny, you want to start?
Well, no, I agree with you 100%. You can't look. I've got my opinion on the economy, but that doesn't mean that the market's going to follow suit. And by the way, not only that, if everybody assumes that Wall Street and Main Street go in tandem and dovetail, if the economy is actually too strong or too good, you could actually have the market sell off because people think, oh, the Fed's likely to raise later, and so it may not match what you see. Conversely, if the economy is really bad, you think, oh, the stock market should be crashing. The other people may anticipate the Fed coming in with some accommodation or easing, and the market may even rally. So sometimes the economy is good, the data points, if you will, the narrative is good, and the stock market's going up, and sometimes the narrative is good, and the stock market's going down. Likewise, sometimes the narrative is bad, the economy is bad, or the narrative is bad, and the stock market's going up, and other times it's going down. That's why it doesn't help. That's why you just got to follow what the market is doing rather than what you think it should be doing.
Fair enough. Don, I'd like to offer you the opportunity to say more than three words, which I apologize for going on there.
You know, one thing that has seemed to impact the market over the last 6 months is the appearance of dovishness or bearishness by the Fed. Initially, when they started talking about more rate raises in December or in the beginning of the fourth quarter, that seemed to put the kibosh on stocks when there were some signs of a weakening economy. And then when they changed their tune in later in the fourth quarter and early in January, that really cemented the beginnings of the rally. The old saying, don't fight the Fed, maybe does have some credence.
Yeah, but didn't you see that in the Fed? Didn't you see that in price, Don? In other words, once that...
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Price reflected what the Fed was doing,
And that's and sometimes that's not always the case, because sometimes the Fed will say, we're going to ease, and the market goes, oh my God, they think things are much worse than they think. Sometimes the market will react opposite what you think it will happen. So anyway,
and
there are no absolutes, always price. That's for sure. The only absolutes are price and volume.
And so, you know what?
There you go.
Speaking of volume, hey, you know what? Don't let me forget, Danny or Don. I need to talk about the fantasy football stock watch list from Michael Sevier. I will forget. I forget every week. Speaking of volume, so I'd like to address or discuss. I think this will help people. Rarely, not rarely, but I sometimes I think I get so just upset at this industry. Like, I'm not a big fan. I don't hide it, that I don't care for. I'm not a get along person with people in this industry. It doesn't mean I think they're all evil either, by the way. There's some really good people in this industry. So don't think that. I just don't care for a lot of it. I don't care for the salespeople. There's very few people that can truly educate in this industry. Everyone else is just trying to sell you something, and you got to strip down the 12b1 fees, which are the marketing fees that people get paid. And it's just so many of your parents and your loved ones have gotten sold mutual funds. You've gotten sold annuities. You've gotten sold life insurance, and you didn't need it, or there were lower cost alternatives to your loved ones or you. And this industry is got such a lobbying group that it'll never stop, I'm convinced. And the marketing, I mean, just look at what Oppenheimer's doing with their marketing. 99% of the time, the market goes up. And it's just a big, it depends on your time frame, right? And And I was about to say it's a big lie, but they have a statistician and a lawyer that said, hey, that's a true statement. We can make that. But what they don't follow it up with, that the market doesn't care when you need the money. So yeah, over time, like 1900 to 2019, the market has gone up. But what if you needed the money during a down cycle during the 70s? What if you needed the money to retire and it was, I don't know, 2000 or 08? And a sell.
I'd love to read the fine print on that.
I would.
That's just absolutely not true.
Yeah, and the sell discipline, it's not short-termism. It doesn't make us traders. What it does is make us risk-averse. The most risk-averse thing you can do is sell, not hold. But we fight. It's like we're rolling a snowball up a hot hill. Like we don't stand a chance in this. Like we are so the small people in this industry in that regard, where everybody wants you to just stay in, and Oppenheimer needs you to stay in, Fidelity needs you to stay in. If you go to cash, the people that sold you these things, these mutual funds, don't get paid their 12b1 fees. Edward Jones, Raymond James, they have you in these funds because the people that sold them to you get paid marketing fees. They're called trailers, not at the park. They're not trailers at the park. They're trailers in these people's wallets.
And the question you just have to ask is, what when you if you're there, if you've got that pie chart of funds with the traders and the fees, just ask them, what is your sell discipline? When, at what point would you sell?
If they say never,
I'd run.
Well, hold on. Take it a step further, Daniel. Look, if you have parents or loved ones and they have someone managing their funds and they have mutual funds, you need an in-person meeting with the person. And you can ask Daniel's question of what would cause you to get out. And that might be a little bit alarming. But if you want to see someone lie to you, squirm, ask them, what are the 12b1 fees they're getting paid? Remind them that they can't not disclose it. Two, pull out the mutual funds, the expense ratios, ask them to point out the 12b1 fees on every fund, and then see and ask them is there a low cost alternative? People don't want you to know this stuff. They don't want you to investigate. I can't be a part of the get along crowd in this industry, and I never will be. It's just disgusting. And it doesn't have to be this way. It just doesn't. And so that's why we tell you about this stuff. That's why we try to educate. And so speaking of education, we get listener mail all the time. And one of our stock nerds, she says, hey, I heard you mention your rules to get in. And you guys are always talking about your rules to get out. And rarely do you mention your rules to get in. And she said, I might have missed it, but can you cover those again? And I said, yeah, absolutely. We can cover the rules to get in and show you application of them. But Don, off the top of your head, what are the triggers that get you not just to screen for the stock, and you can cover your screening mechanism if you want, but what actually gets you to hit enter and buy?
I would say the three main buys. First of all, my favorite is a high volume gap up on either an earnings report or some sort of material news related to the stock. Because that shows that Wall Street was offside, it's under-owned by fund managers, and they're tripping over themselves to get in. This is kicks off the beginning of many a big run higher by stocks, and that's far and away my number one tactic for looking for entry points. The second one is a pullback on strong stocks where volume dries up and it bounces either off the 21 or the 50-day exponential moving average, because that gives you a very tight stop. In uptrends, stocks should behave first to 21 and second 50. maybe with a 1% overshoot to the downside to allow for a lot of people just play stops below the 50. And if it gets hit, they get taken out. You'll see it drop down below it a little bit, but a bounce at that area is my second favorite. My third favorite is a breakout from a flat base or a cup and handle.
Okay.
On volume. And the stocks need to have the N. They need to be fundamentally sound. And to me, the most important letter in Can Slim is the N, which is a new product, a new service, new regulations, new leadership, something new that really causes one of the three things that I just mentioned before.
So what Don mentioned, I'm sorry, Don.
That the three things, the okay. three.
So what Don
entry points.
What Don mentions, there are a couple chart patterns, but it. What Don was saying there, and I don't, if I misspeak, Don, just jump in and hammer me. His screening process to get him into his radar is a fundamental and a technical screen. And then what gets him to trigger that is if the stock starts to make a move on higher volume, meaning it's proven now that supply and demand, there's an imbalance, meaning there's more demand than there is supply, and price is about to move higher. That's what his trigger is. That's if you're not in front of your screen all day. That's maybe you can have an alert set, and or you have your orders already in based on those triggers. But I want to talk about real quick something Don touched on with and Danny, get ready to have your Timterpreter on because I am going to mess this up considerably. Okay, so I'm just
sitting here waiting.
Good, because it's going to get messy. So Don mentioned that buying a pullback to the 21. I love buying pullbacks in stocks that I've been tracking to the 8 or the 21, because bullish stocks in bullish markets, those Fibonacci levels tend to hold, and they're lower risk entry points if the story of the stock is in place and so is the market. But I want to talk about what's causing this and what shakes you out, because just as much as what gets you in, you have to understand what's happening to cause that pullback. Because someone, and rightfully so, by the way, would say, Tim, if it's such a strong stock, why would it pull back? Well, stocks can pull back for a number of reasons. There can be rotation due to profit taking. Let's say that nothing nefarious has happened. It's just... you can't figure out why it's going down because there's no piece of news out. And one of the things, it's not so much rotation, it's actually you, stock nerds. It's a collective you. And what do I mean by a collective you? What Don mentioned, the words pullbacks on low volume. When you get a pullback on low volume, I want you to pay attention to this really quickly. When you get a pullback on low volume, that means the people that matter, the mutual funds, pension funds, hedge funds, they're not the ones selling. So it's you and me. If you and I are selling, we don't matter because we don't have enough buying power to matter. But, or as Chris Berman would say, back. The algorithms care and they matter. And so what happens is algorithms programmed by humans have read all the technical analysis books that you have read. And what they will do is they'll start selling and they'll trigger something known as the automatic stop. So auto stops or live trailing stops, all the technology advances that have occurred in your trading platforms are some of the biggest causes of pullbacks that you can't figure out in the market. And I want to delve into this for a minute because I think it's going to, this is something that I follow every day and Don does as well. And we just don't describe it like as such as I'm trying to do here because I want to unlock some knowledge. That's why you get the low volume pullback. It's the algorithms. It could be somebody who's taking profit, but oftentimes it's the algorithms that are just probing. They're just probing to see where they're probing to see how many stops they can hit. And as the stops get hit, selling. And selling begets more selling. And then usually the selling dries up where? Right down around in the vicinity of an 8 exponential, a 21 exponential, or a 50-day simple. And sometimes you'll hear people say, and oftentimes they overshoot. Yeah, they overshoot those averages because the selling starts to dry up because some of you have caught on to this, and so you'll place your stops right below that level because you don't want the price to pull back below the 21 because then you surely go into the 50, and you get shaken out, and then it closes the day. The stock potentially closes the day unchanged, and you can't figure out what truck hit you and why it did. And someone out there, don't misconstrue what I'm saying. The computers can't see your stops, but they know you as a trader. They know you as a human being, and they've read all the same technical analysis books you like. So then that begs the question, well, Tim, where are your stops at? No, they're live stops, man. I'm managing this in real time. And so it really does. Some people say, Tim, you don't have volume on your charts anymore when we do the videos. And I say, no, I have volume on other charts. I measure volume by percentage a lot, not just on the bottom of a chart, but I'm measuring it by percentage. And I want to know what's a low volume pullback and what I believe is an algo run. Let me pause there. Just because it's an algo run, it doesn't stop us from having our sell discipline enacted. Because just because it's an algo run doesn't mean it can't lead to a greater sell-off that day or later. So if our stop, where we decide to wrap up losses, to quote unquote minimize damage, wherever that stop is, we're going to honor it. And why do you honor it? Because it's not about being right or wrong. It's about net liquidating value of your portfolio. Your portfolio's value is more important to us than one position. And so in order to maximize the net liquidating value of your account, your portfolio, you minimize the damage as it's happening. You can say, well, I'll wait to the end of the day and see if it is that. That's the prerogative, if that's your prerogative. But big sell-offs start as little pullbacks. And so you don't know how they're going to turn out. Just because it's potentially an algo sell run on, say, Alta. This happened in Alta this week. I'm bringing it up because it happened exactly in Alta, down to the 50-day. So you have to honor your rules. It doesn't excuse you from honoring your rules. But if you understand what's happening, you might actually get the confidence to add or build a position at critical levels. An 8, a 21, or a 50. Danny, can you clean all of that up for me, please?
Yeah, so, sure. So what Tim is saying is if you've got institutional money that really wants to get in a stock or add to a position in a stock they already own, okay, when you're looking at charts, a lot of times that stock, it'll rise, and I don't want to use the word extended, but it'll be wherever level it's at, and for whatever reason, whether it's total market or that individual stock, the volume will lighten up. The volume will wane a little bit. So those algos, knowing in advance that they want to pick this stock up, they will start putting in some sell orders. It doesn't take a lot. It can be light volume selling, which is what Tim was talking about. But they really want the stock. They don't want to sell too much. They'll put a few sell orders in because if the volume's real light, it'll make that stock go down. And then as that stock goes down, people will start rushing in there, retail mom and pop sellers, and they'll start selling to protect their profits or minimize their losses, and you'll get a pullback in that stock. And then as soon as it stabilizes, whether that's at the 21 exponential and it starts to, stabilize and form a base and start to bounce, all of a sudden those algos will start coming in there and buying. They're trying to buy. They're trying to actually artificially manufacture. Well, it's not artificial because it's real. It's actually happening. It's price, but they're actually manufacturing the pullback to buy in at a cheaper price. They want this stock, but they want to see if they can get it cheaper, and therefore they're going to manipulate the order flow so that they can get it cheaper. How do they do that? They put in a few sell orders when volume is light, because that's going to make the stock go lower. Then once it goes lower, as soon as it's stable, and they don't know how much lower it'll go, but they're measuring it. As soon as it drops and starts to stabilize, that's when they jump in and start buying. And that's why price and volume is so important. And by the way, one other thing, just so all of the listeners know, all technical indicators, every one of them, doesn't matter which one you use, they all feed off of price and volume. Either both or one or the other. That's why price and volume is so important. So did that make sense? That kind of cleaned it up, put it in layman's terms?
What do you think, Don?
Well done, Danielson.
Thank you, Don. And, thank you, Grasshopper.
And hopefully that, I don't know, I don't know if that was actually helpful to people. Like, not what Danny said, but just in general, like, that's, I'm looking for pullbacks to those areas in stocks that I either own or like to add or build positions. If you want to get a little more finite, I anchor my charts, meaning I'm looking at a daily, or maybe I'm looking at a 2-day or a 3-day. And then I'm looking for maybe, like, say, take it down to a 60-minute chart or as a little smaller time frame chart for a trigger to get into an ETF or an equity. And look, I try to show you that. We do 5 videos a week. Don does 3, I do 2, or I do 3 and Don does 2. And I show you what we're doing. The best part about Revere, one of the best things that we do, it's transparent. Like, we talk about what we're doing in real time, and we try to show you what we think is some of the most important information you can see about risk or where markets are at to help you. And what started out is just keeping our clients informed without, you know, trying not to be theoretical, because so many in this industry want to talk about theory. We try to show you what's real in our world and what we're dealing with. And I think those videos, if you're not watching them, I think they're illuminating.
They actually call it that, modern portfolio theory. That pie chart, sit there and buy and hold. And that's modern portfolio theory. It's just a theory.
And Danny makes fun of me. Well, he doesn't make fun of me. He ribs me about this, that I'm so wide-eyed and bushy-tailed that I think that the people that manage your money or the people that talk about the markets should actually trade in the markets, should actually participate, and not just have theory. And I think that's what makes this industry so freaking dangerous, because there's so many people that are, they're desk jockeys. They're not actually piloting anything. They're just asset gatherers. They're salespeople, which is really a shame, because a good salesperson helps a person get into the right product, steers them from what they don't need. But in this industry, it's just all about assets under management. It has nothing to do with ethics. For some, it might. But I mean, if there were ethics, then there wouldn't be any of these 12b1 fees, right? Where there could be, which always bring up the conflict of interest. The moment someone starts taking 12b1 fees, there's a conflict of interest. Saying that's a little harsher in this industry.
Hey, Tim, I talked to a client the other a couple days ago, and he's, like you said, some of our clients are very passive and they trust us with their life savings, their money. But then some actually have a little small portfolio they trade on the side because they love the markets and they watch it. And then we have the majority of their stuff. But the point is, we were talking the other day, and he was asking me about some stuff, about some, you know, what are you looking right now? What are you seeing technically? And then we kind of started talking a little bit about other advisory firm, because he was asking about, you know, he'd listened to our podcast a few times, and he made the comment. He said, you know, you guys are so transparent, you really follow it. And, you know, a lot of other advisors really don't, they don't really get into it that much. I'll just use his name. I said, that's because they don't know. They don't do price volume. They don't do technical analysis. They're really to manage you and to be your friend. They're not, they don't know about the markets. In fact, you actually know more than 80 to 90% of the advisors, because he's got a pretty good grasp on the markets. And he said, no, you're not. I said, I kid you not. Just go up and talk to them. Just go ask them. Talk to them a little bit. Next time you see them, talk to them, you know, wherever. Just ask them, you know, what levels are we at? What's your sell discipline? What would make you buy? How do you do? And they'll just tell you, you do a pie chart, you leave it alone.
And don't let him intimidate you with nonsense like Sharpe ratio or PE. There's so many. They're so irrelevant. They're so I can't begin. Speaking of PE, I'll tell you what, man. Twitter is a real toxic place. God, do I mention it? I won't mention his name, but someone's
worse than Facebook.
I don't. Yeah, you know, I don't participate too much on the Facebook. Facebook's very private for me. But Twitter is. I love Twitter. So I say this that it's a cesspool at times. I love Twitter. I like being able to interact with people on Twitter. At TJ Razor, TJREAZOR is my handle. It's one of the easiest ways to get a hold of me, Stock Nerds. If you follow me, I'll follow you back, and then you can just interact with me if you want to on the direct message platform there. Don's is D Vandenbord, his Twitter handle. Danny's is one Danny Stewart. And you can we all like interacting with you, so please do follow us. But so this fellow last night is pretty prominent on Twitter, says, I haven't, after the news of Buffett buying Amazon breaks, says, I haven't talked about PE in 20 years. And there was some Twitter dude out with like a series of 6 to 8 tweets of this dude quoting PE from like 3 or 4 years back. And I'm telling you, man, if you try to, one, Twitter's a cesspool. Like I don't have time to go back and find out. I don't really give a rat's behind what people are saying on Twitter unless it's really harmful to my fellow stock nerds. Then I really care. But the fact that this dude could go pull tweets back from 3 to 4 years ago was one, and how quickly he did it, very, very scary. Like, what are you doing that you have that time? And two, you can't lie in this world. This world has, your digital footprints are all over this thing. That's why I think the transparency is so great. We don't pull videos down. We don't edit our videos. We don't go back and go, here, take that out. We don't do any of that. We barely edit the show except for the when Danny's just swearing at Don and I in the beginning. That's a joke. Danny yeah, has the cleanest
music drops. Music drops.
Yeah, that's it. Drops. Yeah, like we what you're seeing is what you get. And if you ever stop by the Dallas office and you want to sit down and trade with us and hang out and have some coffee and see the process, you'll see the real us. And just it's really what you see on the radio here. It's what you see in the videos, and the transparency. I'm telling you, the transparency. None of these people will ever let themselves be recorded, let alone be transparent, because it's like one big what do you call it? One big Monte Carlo game on the corner. Is that what it is, Don? When you do the cups and what cup is the what ball is the cup under? Or did I say that backwards? What cup is the ball under? It's one big game.
It's a game. Yeah, the shell game.
That's what it is. The shell game.
Shell game. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one big shell game for these people. Don't let them like what's Mark Zandi going to do when his company that in a number that he works on reports a number? I don't believe it. How many people follow that? And then how many people took action on Mark Zandi, dude, noted economist? It's like these analysts, like it's a joke, but there's, you know, like most humor has an element of truth to it. Analysts, you don't need them in a good market and you don't want them in a bad market. And you know, some of you are think I'm casting a wide blanket here, but just ask some questions about what you're seeing and what you're hearing and why. You'll be really surprised at your answers. I can't keep up, but the easiest thing to do is to be honest, tell the truth. Like when something doesn't work out, that's why we talk about it first on our videos, about what's not working. Because it's relieving. It's like, this is real life. And we know that you're struggling out there. A lot of you struggle to sell because you just wanted to get back to even. And if we can give you the confidence to like, well, we sold for a 3 or 4 or even an 8% loss, maybe they'll give you the confidence instead of, because taking an 8% loss is so much better than running your thing into the ground for a 30 to 35% loss. Well, it's not a loss if you don't take it, right, Rick? Rick Ferry. Is that who that said? Who says that, Don? Who's the guy? It's not a loss if you don't take it.
It was either him or Rudy. I'm not sure which one of them said it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. They call that a paper loss versus an unrealized gain versus a realized gain, or realized loss, unrealized loss. It's not a loss until you sell it. Look, it's a loss the moment it went down. You can kid yourself that that's not a loss, but if you try to spend it, it doesn't spend. It's whatever you, like you said, Tim, the net liquidating value or the portfolio market value, the fair market value of your portfolio. That's what it is at any given time.
Yeah, it's just not about one position and letting one position get back to even, which then goes to a point of we position size against risk. Like, our risk controls aren't just our sell discipline, it's our position sizing as well. I mean, there's so much. Go ahead, Diane.
And by the way, one reason people don't, they'll wait till I get back even before I sell, that's so that they don't have to admit that they were wrong or it didn't work out. That's behavioral finance. That's their ego. That's not about making money.
And there's some.
And in fact,
good.
Yeah, you'll do much better. It's not about whether that particular individual stock or investment is a gain or loss. It's going forward, is there someplace better for my money? And that's all it is. And so your ego, which is kind of what you started out the show with, your ego, your narrative could get in the way of you making money. If your narrative is that stock is great and it doesn't turn out to be great, don't just hold it so it fits your narrative. Cut it loose and move on.
Right. And people like to, and people who quote, call themselves, well, I'm an investor. All that means is that you're willing to take a 30% loss to achieve a goal. And no, that's the truth. You laugh, but that's the truth. If you call yourself an investor, that means you're willing to get beat up. That means you're willing to go down the alley, a dark alley, and you know that the people are nefarious in the alley and they have guns, and you're going to go in there with a shovel. Just because you're an investor,
don't bring a knife to a gunfight.
Yeah, like some people think that you're a higher class of person if you call yourself an investor. You're not. You're just dumb. But heaven forbid someone actually tell that to your face. Well, I've made a tremendous amount of money investing. Well, I think you could make even more money if you paid attention a little closer. And you actually trimmed your losses and then had the courage of your convictions based on process, which we covered earlier in the show, to actually get back in. That's what's missing.
The huge ups and downs would be much less. Even if you made the same amount of money or similar, without the huge ups and downs, it doesn't turn you into a basket case.
It's amazing. Yeah. And
completely nerd. Yeah.
And what I just pointed out, stock nerds, is what marketing has told you. Marketing makes you think that you're a better person if you call yourself an investor and you hold through severe losses to see the other side of the trade. And some of you are just sitting awash in Fitbit and GoPro based on that. And everyone has their own Fitbits or GoPros. And it's just not necessary. The wise person who participates in the markets knows how to both enter and leave, not just enter. There's a lot of holes in that logic.
Bitcoin, anyone?
Oh, there's a lot of that. Don, what are you seeing in the markets next week? And then I'll get into what I want to say.
Today, on Friday, I'm seeing the market completely shake off any fear that Powell put in with his comment about transitory inflation on Wednesday. As we those lows held. And you always want to see a day like that as a potential inflection point. Did it put a top in? Doesn't appear that it did.
Danny, any last parting words here? And then I'll cover what I'm going to say here.
No, I think it was you covered the topics very well.
Yeah. Now listen, stock nerds and market lovers, I love you. Don loves you. Danny loves you. So when we say things here, it's not from a cynical point of view. We're not looking down on high. If anyone wants to know my trading journey, call 855-REAL-WEALTH. I'd be more than happy to tell you how the opinions to which I hold, how I've arrived at them. More than happy to do that. If you would like to get a hold of us, the easiest thing to do is just call. We're never going to spam you. You just don't get any of that. It's Dan. If you want to email because you're afraid of the phone, Dan at Revere Asset, Don at Revere Asset, or Tim at Revere Asset. Now, a couple of things. I do think Amazon goes up to hit new highs here. I don't know when. I don't profess to know the next tick in the market, but I think that's the trajectory Amazon eventually is on here. Well, that's a great statement, Tim. I want you to understand the nature right now of the pullback that happened. Markets vacillated up to recent or new highs. They don't have to exceed them by a lot to be called new highs. A lot of you haven't participated or are just getting back to even. A lot of you think that it's time to sell off and you've sold everything or you've trimmed back. Stocks at or near, stocks or indices, ETFs, at or near all-time highs, when the story of the market is still intact, is a very bullish thing. What you think is irrational is you falling prey to marketing. Can we pull back? Absolutely. And pullbacks, when they're bought the way they were this week, I don't know if they're going. I don't know if there's a further pullback ahead. I don't know the next tick of the market, but I do know that you have to mark up the merchandise to make it attractive again to buyers. And what the market did this week was made merchandise look attractive again to buyers. So could we go higher from here? Absolutely. And the chart I think you want to watch is the Russell. I've covered that in several videos. And if you want to know the watch list you should put together this week, for this coming week, watch Don's video that he's going to release Friday late afternoon, early evening. He's going to show you his best stocks, 21 over 21. Danny, are you whistling at me?
No, I'm sorry. I was listening.
Okay. Don's video, you can find it at Revere Asset. We make all of our videos free. We don't charge for a thing. We don't track you. We don't email you. We don't do anything to affect our consumer. We protect our consumer. We protect you as investors. We're your champion. How could we ever do anything nefarious like that? So if you want to know what's on Don's watch list, he'll give it to you. Just watch that video this week, and you can find it right on the homepage at revereasset.com. And with that, my fellow stockners and market lovers, we love you. We hope you have a great week, and we'll see you the next time on Your Money.